Global Connections Television is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guests. We invite you to go to the website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous shows. If you're involved with a PBS or community access television station or an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or perhaps a podcast or just a computer and would like to share the programs, please feel free to do so. Global Connections is provided at no cost to help people in the U.S. and worldwide better understand how international issues impact our lives.
Welcome to today's Global Connections program. I'm Bill Miller. Today we're going to take a look at war and the various forms of media, in some cases propaganda about wars, that will take place. My guest is an expert on this topic. Mr. Norman Solomon is an American journalist, media critic, author, and activist. His latest book is War Made Invisible: How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Norman Solomon, welcome to today's Global Connections program.
Thanks, Bill.
Good to see you again. I appreciate you coming back. We've got a lot to cover here, but very briefly, I didn't mention in the introduction, but you've been involved with you're the founder of the Institute for Public Accuracy, and you've been involved with RootsAction.org. Is that correct?
That's right. And a lot of the concern, and I think many people feel this in some way, is that we're deluged with media messages, and often we have reason to think that some of it is what we might call propaganda. And so part of the crucial mission that both the Institute for Public Accuracy and RootsAction.org involve themselves with has to do with how we can change this dynamic so that we are really people in, for instance, the United States, who truly are participating in democracy. The saying, the informed consent of the governed is what makes democracy tick. And if we're uninformed or misinformed, then the whole thing goes haywire.
It certainly does, yes. And our viewers, if they would like more information, they can go to two websites. One is www.rootsaction.org to get more information on that particular operation that you've been involved with. And then the other is www.accuracy.org for additional information. But let's jump right into your book, War Made Invisible: How America Hides the Human Toll of Its Military Machine. Why did you write this book? What was the main purpose behind it?
Well, really, what's hidden in plain sight is the reality that even though, as we've experienced for the past many months and really the last couple of years in terms of the Ukraine war and more recently the Gaza war, our media, our news coverage are often flooded with reports, footage, interviews, and so forth about and from the war. We might feel, hey, well, we're seeing the war. The title of the book, War Made Invisible, refers to the fact that we are virtually clueless if we're depending on news media as to what war is really all about. I think of the saying in the Zen tradition, the finger pointing at the moon is not the moon. The news media are pointing at war, but what it's really like to be in a war zone, to experience the terror, the anguish, the grief, the suffering, we're virtually left without a clue if we give to the news media the assumption that they are conveying to us what war is really all about. And so to make war visible is to become more humanly connected to people who are actually suffering the consequences of the warfare state.
Two things I've noticed over the years, well, more than two, hopefully, but two in particular. One is wars are easy to get into and very difficult to get out of. You can start wars. George W. Bush found out you could illegally invade Iraq, start a war, spend trillions of dollars, and destabilize the Middle East. And we're still dealing with the fallout from that today in so many different ways. But the second thing is that so many of the people who actually were in war zones do not feel that war is a great thing. Very few of them talk about the glory and the valor of it and how it was just so lovely and that type of thing. In fact, most of them, especially the veterans of World War II, they, most of them refused to even talk about it. They just simply won't do it. And there's a reason for that. There's an obvious reason for that, but it's really tragic. Well, let's look at this situation in Ukraine. We saw Russia invaded. It's a violation of the United Nations Charter, just on across the board. But what in your book could be used to help bring peace to that very, very destructive war that's taking place? And what can be done to get the Russians either out or get the Ukrainians and the Russians to come to some agreement over the land and the allocation of it to both sides? How can that be helpful?
Some of the invisibility of war entails making unviewable the option of genuine diplomacy. And there's a very strong tendency for news media and people in political power to not only encourage us to choose up sides, but to have enthusiasm about rooting for one side. It's almost as though the war is Super Bowl and we have chosen up sides, and then we're supposed to be very excited about it and be enthusiastic. And to use your point about the Iraq war invasion, and you were not exaggerating at all, you used the word trillions of dollars go into it. That's so costly in so many ways in terms of what we don't get in terms of healthcare, education, housing, neonatal care, you name it. And in this process, we have a foreclosed, or you might say hidden, option to resolve disputes such as the Ukraine conflict before they break out into all-out war. And then if they have broken out to all-out war, finding a real option for negotiations to end the war as quickly as possible. Unfortunately, there are very reliable reports that the opposite took place, and that then Prime Minister of Britain, Boris Johnson, in cooperation with the U.S., actually cut off negotiations that were near ending the Ukraine war almost 2 years ago. This is tragic, and it is really the road not taken that is so horrendous in terms of results.
Mm-hmm. Right. I remember, let's say the Russians have been there a little over 2 years now in Ukraine, and thousands of people have been killed, millions displaced, hundreds of millions, billions of dollars of damage done, just on across the board, just total devastation. And I remember thinking back before the invasion of Ukraine, I remember Joe Biden was predicting that the Russians were going to invade. This is when the Russians had troops along the border with Belarus, as I recall. And basically, Ukraine said, well, we've been fighting a war with Russia now since 2017 or something like that. And no one really believed Joe Biden, but it actually took place. And here we are today. What, along with these negotiations that you mentioned that were taking place, what can be done to end that horrible conflict?
Well, really, at this point, we sort of need to look at how to, so to speak, put this macabre, terrible genie back in the bottle, because it's been unleashed. And to some extent, I think it's helpful to see how this happened so that there could be at least some effort now to retrace those steps. And I think a lot of it has to do with NATO and NATO membership, prospectively, of Ukraine. I remember very vividly weeks before this horrific, illegal, immoral Russian invasion of Ukraine, President Joe Biden gave a news conference, and he was asked about the option of Ukraine joining NATO. And this was really a fateful moment, because I believe that if he had answered differently, very differently, it would have been quite conceivable that the invasion of Ukraine would have never happened. He was asked, Mr. President, what do you think about the possibility of Ukraine joining NATO? And he said, well, that's their prerogative. If they want to join NATO, that should be worked out with NATO. That was completely the wrong answer, because that was a red line for Russia. And it's not just Putin, who has evolved into a dictator. across the political spectrum, from hard right conservatives to liberals and progressives who were fighting for civil liberties in Russia, they all were against Ukraine joining NATO. And so Biden, rather than opening the door to some reconciliation and finding solutions, he basically slammed the door on finding alternatives to war. And I'd remind viewers and listeners, if you were to conceive of a situation where a Russian-aligned coalition, a military alliance like the old Warsaw Pact, if the leaders of that pact said, oh, well, Canada or Mexico are welcome to join in, and then that serious possibility was floated, there would have been a complete freak out in Washington, and they might have taken so-called preemptive military action. So it's part of that underlying reality. And I know on Global Connections, you've discussed this many times from various vantage points, Bill, that when you put yourself in the shoes of others, you begin to build a path for a peaceful world.
Exactly right. And that was certainly a definite mistake. And words have meanings, especially in foreign policy. But that was definitely a mistake on his part, without a doubt. The situation, though, has just deteriorated so badly now. And we see we've got basically a boycott, come right down to it, by the Speaker of the House, Donald Trump, and a large number, I'm not going to say the majority of the Republican Party, but a large number of the Republican Party, who are now reticent to fund Ukraine. And we even have some people who are saying, well, if, you know, let Russia have Ukraine, how do you feel about that?
I think it's a downward spiral that war and more war has taken us into. On the one hand, the reality that Ukrainians have a right to defend themselves is very cogent. At the same time, dumping tens of billions, literally, of dollars into armaments, into ammunition, into just building up and fueling the fire, I think that's wrong. And it's been proven wrong because it heads off the possibility, the inclination, any sincere interest in negotiations whatsoever. So we've seen the result. The result has been, in effect, people in Washington, in high reaches and echelons of government, echoed by the punditocracy, the mainstream corporate media, essentially saying, we're being very moral and righteous. You Ukrainians, go out and fight. Kill and be killed. Go on, kill them and get killed. As though that's some kind of solution. And we see, as you allude to, Bill, the results have just been horrendous. It comes back to, if we're going to have a peaceful resolution, then we need to walk a path towards that. And so I think that to continue to shovel arms in the billions of dollars worth to Ukraine without any demonstrable interest in diplomacy is just catastrophic, and we need a different path.
And the Secretary General of the United Nations, Secretary General Guterres, has tried his best to, well, first off, he tried to thwart the invasion of Russia into Ukraine, and then he's worked on trying to get Russia out of Ukraine and to end the war. Well, you're watching Global Connections Television, which is a privately funded, independently produced program. The opinions expressed on Global Connections are solely those of the moderator and his guest. We'd invite our viewers to go to our website at www.globalconnectionstelevision.com to view previous programs. Also, if you're involved with a PBS or a community access television station, or perhaps an educational institution that has an intra-campus television hookup, or you have a podcast, or you just have a computer, you like our shows, and you would like to share them, please feel free to do so. Global Connections Television is provided at no cost as a public service to help us better understand international issues and how they impact our lives. Today, we're talking to an author who is very knowledgeable about the whole subject of war and the PR aspects of war and the detrimental aspects in particular. Mr. Norman Solomon is an American journalist, media critic, author, and activist. His latest book is War Made Invisible, How America Hides the Human Toll of its military machine. And Norman, we could, if there's so many wars going on, we could spend forever on each one probably. But let's fast forward over to Israel. How do you view that whole Israeli-Hamas situation? We all saw what happened on October 7th, the horrific invasion. But by the same token, even though Israel, to me, had the world opinion behind it on October the 8th, it has lost that now by responding in such a disproportionate way in the Gaza Strip and destroying that area and killing over 30,000 Gazans, or Palestinians, I should say. But how do you view that situation, and what can we do to hopefully stop that?
What has happened for close to half a year now in Gaza reflects the results of injustice that has gone on for decade after decade. And we should have a single standard of human rights. It shouldn't matter the nationality, the race, the ethnicity, or the religion of the people involved. The U.S. support for Israel, and I say this as a U.S. citizen who happens to be an American Jew, the U.S. support for Israel has been a subsidy for injustice. Human Rights Watch, Amnesty International, B'Tselem, the Israeli human rights group, they've all agreed that there is a pattern of apartheid that Israel has imposed on Palestinian people. And so we need to avoid getting into an Orwellian zone where, okay, we're against apartheid in South Africa when it existed, but somehow it's okay when Israelis do that. That is not okay. It's the opposite. And we've got a situation where decade after decade of injustice, with military suppression of Palestinians in the West Bank and in Gaza, it's resulted in this horrible blow up. And we ought to recognize and connect with and mourn the losses that are involved. Nearly 1,200 Israelis killed on October 7th of last year. And as you say, more than 30,000 now Palestinians, most of them children and women, have been killed by an ongoing Israeli attack. And one of the concerns that I think is very deep for so many people in the United States and elsewhere in the world is that the globe's big superpower, the United States, is making that slaughter possible, quite literally, not only with diplomatic support, three vetoes of a resolution for ceasefire at the UN Security Council, but according to Israeli officials and others, upwards of 80% of all the weapons and ammunition being used to kill in Gaza is courtesy of U.S. taxpayers. And we learned from the Washington Post recently that more than 100 of the weapons transfers have taken place since October of last year from the United States have been completely secret. So this is where we get back to the lack of the informed consent of the governed here in the United States. The polling is now clear. Most Americans are opposed to simply the U.S. continuing to send this weaponry to Israel. This is a horror. It is an absolute travesty. It is a terrible blight on the human rights records of both Israel and the United States. And it's imperative that, so to speak, peace-loving people the world say, this is completely unacceptable.
That war has gotten so unpopular now, especially in the United States and around the world, really, that a lot of foreign policy observers feel that President Biden is going to distance himself from Bibi Netanyahu. In fact, that's already started, it looks like. And just recently, Chuck Schumer, the Senate leader, who happens to be Jewish and one of the biggest supporters of Israel out there, said that he felt that Bibi Netanyahu has really come to the, he didn't put in so many words, but he just basically said he's been dysfunctional and he is not lending himself to peace and that they need to hold elections. And of course, if they hold elections, Bibi Netanyahu's out. He will lose in all probability. But what would you recommend to the United States? If we stop defunding Israel, that we no longer send funds to them, that we keep trying to figure out ways to get aid to the Palestinian people, either through boat lifts. The airdrops were pretty ineffective and very expensive, and it reached only a very small number of people. But what would your recommendations be?
Well, one way to proceed, so to speak, is to follow the law. What's called the Leahy Amendment and other statutes on the books say that the U.S. should not be shipping weapons to a government that engages in wholesale human rights violations, which in a way is an understatement of what Israel has been doing. There is no basis for, in a moral, ethical term, for the United States to be sending one more rifle, one more bullet to Israel. There's a hot-wired 10-year, $3.8 billion a year deal that the U.S. and Israel are most of the way through that automatically has sent that amount of weaponry every year, $3.8 billion worth. On top of that, as we speak, Congress is in the midst of considering and quite likely passing requests for $14 billion worth of additional military to Israel. This all should be stopped. This is completely wrong. And underlying the extremism of the Netanyahu government in Israel is the reality that there is an underlying ideology that has taken hold from the Israeli government that needs to be rejected. And that is that disregarding UN security resolutions, that Israel has the right, because might makes right, to continue to suppress Palestinian rights. And that needs to be rejected.
And a lot of people are very unhappy with the United States for vetoing resolutions that come before the UN Security Council that are calling for a ceasefire, or perhaps are critical of Israel for one reason or another. So that is a definite, well, it's definitely something we should consider. Well, let me ask you, I can't believe we're about out of time, but in our last 2 minutes or so, what are some of the, what's one or another point from your book that you'd like to convey to our viewers today? That there are so many points, we could spend an hour on each, I'm sure, but what are some of the points?
I think a key aspect is for us to shake ourselves out of the, you might say, sleepwalking mode that U.S. media routinely encourage us to stay in about war. The illusion that when we see something on a screen, when we read about it in a reputable newspaper telling us about a war, somehow we're encouraged to and often induced to believe, oh, now we know what war is all about. And that's why I ended up with the title War Made Invisible, because it is the invisibility of war, not the myth of it, not the transitory images through media, but the invisibility of actual war that makes it easy for the population in the United States and reporters and politicians in Washington, easy for us to feel like we somehow understand what's going on and tacitly accept what's going on. It should be the opposite. If we really come more to terms with what war is about, then we have a much better chance of mobilizing to end it.
And I think the people who know and who have experienced war would agree with you 100%. There is no glorious war. We should not be engaging in them. We, at times, you have to do things maybe that's defensive, but still, there's a difference between that and aggressively causing people to involve themselves in a war. But Norman Solomon, it is such an important topic, and I want to thank you so very much for a very interesting and a very informative program.
Well, thank you, Bill, and many thanks to Global Connections.
My pleasure. We'll do it again. Thank you so much.
Thanks.
I'm Bill Miller. Thank you for joining us today on Global Connections Television.